My Amma's face is the first face that I remember, and hers is the dearest of all the faces I have known, with the exception of one.
Welcome to the University of Manitoba's Icelandic Radio Journal, a continuing series documenting interviews and fragments engaging with Icelandic culture. In this edition of the journal, we are joined by Borga Jakobsen, translator of works by Johan Magnus Bjarnason. She has kindly taken the time to speak with us about her experience translating these works from Icelandic into English, and shares her special knowledge about the author himself. To begin, Borga was kind enough to read us a translation of a short story by Magnus.
This is a short story written by Johan Magnus about 1926, before there were any centennial celebrations. I translated it from the original, called Minningar Markið, and in English I just called it The Memorial. There was a time when groups from many nations sought new lands. People from a certain eastern country moved across the ocean to settle in the western world. At first, they met many hardships, but through patience they overcame their problems. As time went on, their settlement flourished. When 100 years had gone by, the citizens agreed that they should erect some permanent marker to commemorate the founding of the state. All who had come of age were asked to give their ideas. All were eager to take part in the celebrations. "I want a monument hewn from marble," said the first speaker. "It would be more to the point to engrave the names of all the founders on a plaque, which would hang in our assembly rooms, said the second. "A finer tribute," said the third speaker, "would be to build a hall so beautiful that no other building would compare with it, and dedicate it to the pioneers." "It would be better," said the fourth, "to raise a cairn at the site where the settlers first landed, in their honor." Many other suggestions followed. Finally, a bent old woman came forward. Her age was 100 years. With her, she carried her spindle, and she walked with a cane. She said, "I know of something which is worthy of being a symbol and a memorial to the brave folk who laid the foundations for our community, because they woke while others slept." "What is it, mother?" called the people from the gallery. The old woman said, "It is a cradle."
Can you tell us about the influences that led to your interest in translating works by Johan Magnus Bjarnason?
Well, first of all, his work had been recognized as a contribution to Icelandic literature, and therefore I felt that a translation would make it more available to, or make it available to, a broader audience, and I felt it was worthwhile doing for that reason. And for personal reasons, I was interested in sharing this story. Magnus, as he was generally called, taught school in Geysir, the community where I grew up. My father was fortunate enough to be one of his pupils. When Magnus left Geysir for health reasons, my father wrote to him a few times and received letters in return. These letters were kept in my father's desk, along with his most important papers. When I was a child, my father followed an old Icelandic custom of reading aloud for the family on winter evenings. Sometimes those readings included novels or short stories written by Johan Magnus Bjarnason. And Magnus built a house on his homestead farm, which was called Arnheiðarstaðir. It was the name of his grandmother's home, or his grandparents' home in Iceland. and this house was built just east of Aarberg. Magnus and his wife Gudrun lived there for several years. When members of the Esja chapter of the Icelandic National League decided to build a cairn on the property as a memorial to the author, I had noticed a little story called Menningarmarkið, which had been written in Icelandic, of course, by Magnus himself about 40 years earlier. I translated it into English because it seemed so appropriate to me. I sent it to the committee, and the translation became part of the program when the cairn was unveiled. Sometime later, my dear friend Sigurbjörg Stefansson, a longtime teacher in the Gimli Collegiate, gave me a set of Johan Magnus Bjarnason's books called Ritsabn. She said, perhaps I would like to translate some of his work. In preparation for the millennial celebrations of 2000, there was much activity in Nova Scotia. People of Icelandic descent, or those who had special interest in the history of the Icelandic settlement there, organized a new chapter of the INL called the Icelandic Memorial Society of Nova Scotia. One very active member of the new chapter was Marshall Burgess, a judge from Halifax. He is himself a grandson of one of the original settlers. He sent an article to Lögberg Heimskringla asking for stories relating to this history. I wrote to him and mentioned the short stories written by Magnus. I asked whether he would be interested in translations. He was very interested. With that encouragement, I published The Errand Boy in the Mooseland Hills, a small book containing 14 of Magnus's short stories. Furthermore, the Nova Scotia chapter, especially Marshall Burgess, had heard about Eirikur Hansson, and they were particularly interested in seeing a translation of that work.
Borge, can you tell us a bit about who Johan Magnus Bjarnason was?
It's quite a story to tell about Johan Magnus Bjarnason. I will only make a few comments about him at this point. He was born in Iceland in 1866, and he came to Nova Scotia in 1875 when he was 9 years old. That was after the volcanic eruption in the Dingo Mountains, which caused a widespread damage in eastern Iceland. His family joined about 30 other families who settled in a forested area they named Markland. For a short time, he attended an English school there, and his teacher encouraged him to improve his English by reading English literature. When he moved to Manitoba, he had an advantage over the people who came directly to the prairies. Soon he became a teacher. Altogether, he taught school in various Icelandic districts for about 30 years. He was renowned as a teacher, a community leader, and as a writer.
The Young Icelander focuses on the life story of the main character, Icelandic immigrant Eirikur Hansson. What are some of the historical events that inform this fictional work?
The Young Icelander is set in a time frame roughly from 1866 to 1900, and references are made to events that happened during those years, such as the American Civil War, the Battle of Sedan between Prussia and France, and skirmishes along the Indian border. These events set the mood of those times. Large-scale emigration was taking place in the last part of the 19th century from different European countries. The eruption in the Dingo Mountains took place as described. The Icelandic settlement in Nova Scotia took place and was abandoned for the reasons described in the novel. Descriptions of rural life in Nova Scotia are based to some extent on experience. All authors write from personal experience when it is appropriate. Magnus seems to enjoy retracing steps as he describes some of the journeys in the book. However, Magnus himself stresses that the story is fiction and that the action is not based on real events. The characters are not based on real people.
What were some of the experiences that immigrants arriving from Iceland were faced with in Nova Scotia at the end of the 19th century?
The problems that the Icelanders experienced relate to homesickness, poverty, having to adjust to different kinds of work, such as dealing with the heavy forests, building roads, mining, and having to adjust to different foods, struggling with a new language. But they were fortunate in Nova Scotia in that they had log houses built for them, and they had provisions of food for the first year. This kind of help was not offered elsewhere, as far as I know.
It's interesting to hear that although there were hardships, there was some positive support for the Icelanders upon arrival. Do you think that these experiences were common? And does the story of the young Icelander reach out to a broad audience?
Well, The Young Icelander is an immigrant novel, and some of the difficulties encountered apply to immigrants today, as well as in 1875. Loss of homeland and family, adjustments to a new society are as poignant now as then. Magnus's philosophy of life that shines through the novel is as important today as it was then.
Borga, other than Eirikur, which character within the story touched you the most?
Apart from Eirikur himself, the characters that I admire the most are his Amma and his benefactor, Mr. Sanford. Amma raised Eirikur from the beginning with love and with insistence on truthfulness. She shared with him stories and poems and prayers and the foundation of the Lutheran faith. She only had 11 years to prepare him for a life on his own. Mr. Sanford said that Eirikur was just as dear to him as if he were his own son. He respected Eirikur as a person, although he came from a different background and a different ethnic group. When he died, Mr. Sanford was respected by all who knew him, not for wealth or influence, but for his integrity.
Can you tell us about Magnus's multicultural ideals? Do you think he was at all ahead of his time?
Magnus was not so much ahead of his times in his multicultural ideals. Rather, 100 years later, we have often been behind in our approach. The American Civil War had just taken place as he was growing up, and human rights were very much an issue. Magnus was intensely proud of his own heritage. At the same time, he saw good in people of other nationalities. In that, he was a citizen of the world.
Borga, what is your hope for the future, for this work of literature?
Well, the book was translated as a tribute to Johann Magnus. It was also an attempt to show his work to those who could not read it in the original. It is my hope that it will be read, especially by young people. It was amazing to see that students in the Department of Icelandic were already reading the book. Perhaps it will find its way into some reading lists for other students of Icelandic. I thought I would read a little passage about Amma, because Amma was such an influence in his life, even though he was only 11 years old when Amma died. My Amma's face is the first face that I remember, and hers is the dearest of all the faces I have known, with the exception of one. Amma was a woman of medium height, and she was rather stout. She had strong features, rather plain, but her expression showed unyielding steadfastness, which immediately called for respect. Her blue eyes and her arched eyebrows showed sensitivity and kindness. She always held her head high. She had definite ideas about right and wrong, and she was strict in that regard. She looked straight into people's eyes when she talked to them. It was always hard to look into her eyes whenever I had done anything that I was not supposed to do. I felt that Amma could read my thoughts if I ever tried to hide anything from her. I always had to tell her the truth. Whenever I was troubled or unhappy, her eyes were full of sympathy and encouragement. When I look back as far as memory can take me, Amma was always a guardian angel hovering over me. When I was little, I cried if Amma was out of sight. I felt that it was my right to have her always with me. When I saw her return, I stopped crying, and I was laughing while the tears were still running down my cheeks.
This edition has been brought to you by Borge Jakobsen, Andrew McGilvery, and the Department of Icelandic at the University of Manitoba. Thanks for tuning in.